Thanks, Chris. This is Uprising. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. Yesterday was Election Day in Wisconsin, and by all accounts, the ballot became a barometer of the electorate's support for Governor Scott Walker's agenda. The most hotly contested race with long-term implications may be for the state's Supreme Court seat. The two nominees are considered to reside at opposite ends of the ideological spectrum. Incumbent Supreme Court Judge David Prosser is a self-described judicial conservative and is favored by the right. Joanne Kloppenburg, an assistant state attorney, is backed by progressives. Governor Scott Walker's controversial legislation that curbed collective bargaining rights for public employees is currently tied up in the courts. Legal challenges are expected to take it all the way to the state Supreme Court, where the winner of Tuesday's elections will rule on it. This has catapulted the race between Prosser and Kloppenburg into the national spotlight. The usually low-key contest for a spot on the court is now a highly charged fight within the battle between Scott Walker and Labour. Money is pouring in from all sides. The Washington Post reports that independent expenditures on the race may surpass $5 million. The 26 historic days when Wisconsinites occupied the state capitol in Madison earlier this year led up to this electoral moment. Los Angeles-based filmmaker Amy Williams is originally from Wisconsin. When she heard what was transpiring in her home state, she rushed back to document the historic movement as it unfolded. Amy Williams now joins me in studio. Welcome to Uprising, Amy Williams.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for joining us. So we've talked to you on our program before while you've been in Wisconsin. You're back now in Los Angeles where you're based, but you're originally from Wisconsin. And now that there's been so much historic, such movement building that's so historic happening in Wisconsin, have you been able to step back and view it all from a broader perspective? And if so, what have these post-Wisconsin days been like for you, if you will?
It's strange because it was such a heady time, you know, those 26 days of occupying the Capitol and being in the throes of it. And now back in California where I live, I've been having these strange dreams and flashbacks and really feeling like I'm reconnecting with my Wisconsin roots. I left the state 20 years ago and traveled the world, basically. And to come back and find that as a filmmaker, the issues that I've been the most engaged with in my career are playing out right in my own proverbial childhood backyard was quite remarkable. And I felt like I was kind of, you know, in the right place at the right time. And I have all this personal, I was explaining to a friend of mine, you know, what it's like to be from Wisconsin is people always usually say that people from the Midwest are really decent people, you know, that we can kind of tolerate difference and we can debate issues and accept difference. And we're just decent, kind human beings, right? And the Wisconsin demonstrations were just that. They were peaceful. They were funny. They were a cross-section of all kinds of different people with different views coming together. But what united them was this rage against Walker and his anti-union legislation. So I guess what I'm trying to say is that Wisconsin for me was a wake-up call, not just for me as a filmmaker, but for the rest of the country. And stepping back and looking at, okay, now where do we go? Where do we go with the marching? Where do we go with the chanting? And the struggle for my friends who are still there and for those of us who care about this spark that was ignited in Wisconsin is to ask, what are we uniting around? What are we struggling for? And where do we go from here?
Right. Well, currently, politically in Wisconsin, there are efforts to, of course, challenge the collective bargaining part of the law that was passed that would decimate collective bargaining, to challenge that in court. There's an election on Tuesday that we'd find out what the makeups of the court would be that would decide this. And also, there are recall efforts, I understand, happening against 16 state senators, 8 Republicans, 8 Democrats. Are those, tell us a little bit about those post-movement efforts that are going through some of these channels. Where are they coming from?
Well, there was a lot of energy that was generated during those 26 days. And so they've taken basically the nucleus of the struggle that used to be just this constant circle around the Capitol, and they've expanded it to the entire state. And there's been phone bankings, there's been teach-ins, there have been door-to-door canvassing to get out the recall effort. And they did collect enough signatures for Dan Kopanky. So he's the first person that they filed for recall. It's the 8th recall movement in the history of the state of Wisconsin.
Wow.
So this hasn't been something that's been done. I did speak with Rachel, who's sort of my ear to the ground there, the social worker that was on your show. And she said, you know, it's been really difficult to know how that recalled effort is going. As you said, there's eight on both sides. And she said, even in a place like Milwaukee, which is where I grew up, which is known as more Democratic, that the feeling was in the phone banking rooms that they couldn't really say whether or not they were going to be successful with the recall efforts. Hmm. So that's really disturbing.
And why the recall efforts against Democrats?
Well, I think that there's definitely a feeling from the Republicans that having left the state, 14 left the state, right? Mm-hmm. They basically skirted their duties as legislators and that they should be recalled because that's
so those recall efforts are coming from the Republicans against
yes.
the Democrats,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Okay. So now I want to turn to some of those voices on the ground, some of those voices that you captured whose audio we can hear a little bit. But, of course, you're a filmmaker. Your YouTube channel for our listeners is youtube.com/whywisconsin. But I want to play for our listeners an excerpt, a small clip of one of the videos that you did.
I worked out in Milwaukee as a probation and parole agent. I've been down here 6 days now, 7 days now, off and on. Whenever I don't have to work or can get a vacation day, I'm here.
This is the 10th day we've been here. The first day I started with the students group and we brought Valentine's down to the governor's office, and I was so excited about that because it was so big. And then the next day we came, I was surprised more because there was 13,000 people, and then the next day 30,000. So we've been here every day.
Legislature, when we're talking about funding levels for different programs and stuff, you know, we take our lumps, and sometimes we get laid off, and sometimes the programs get added to, sometimes they get subtracted from, but nobody ever has tried to take our rights away.
Well, it's a threat in that collective bargaining for all of labor, whether it's the public sector or private sector, absolutely, you know, brings an equality to the workplace.
This is about working people having dignity in the workplace and a right to have a say in the workplace.
Tell me what democracy looks like.
This is what democracy looks like.
Where are you from?
Madison.
Oh, cool. What do you do?
I'm a kindergarten teacher.
All right.
City housing.
All right. Right on. I'm a social worker.
Right. Good, good.
I'll tell you, I'm standing in a house of labor. I love this organization. It was built on sweat, blood, and tears, and the foundation is solid!
Actually, I came from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, so up here in solidarity with all my brothers and sisters in support of workers' rights and support of all of these social programs that are being cut here in the state of Wisconsin.
And that is an excerpt of some of the video that you took while you were in Wisconsin, those 26 historic days at the state capitol. And you were talking to, so many people. The video shows the sea of people that were there. So many, voices that you could potentially capture. Tell us a little bit about how important it was for you to capture a broad cross-section of voices, because, of course, there were workers of all stripes there. There were also students there who weren't even union workers, but who were there in solidarity with them. And they were just ordinary Wisconsinites who weren't necessarily involved in the public employees unions, but who were, who were just shocked by what they were seeing.
I mean, as the movement grew, so did the demographic. I literally saw that. So in the beginning, as you heard in the video, it was mainly students. They were driven by the Teachers Association, which is a labor union that represents graduate students, the TAA. But there were also a lot of undergrad students that were coming, and mm-hmm. it was kind of fun to sleep over and bring your sleeping bag. And it was was organized by the students. But then the public employee unions, which are the first ones to have their rights, decimated by this bill, basically AFSCME started to come. And then I think the day that things started to really turn was when the cops marched in. Mm-hmm. And I have a wonderful young police officer, Madison police officer, who had it, Actually, also, I want to also talk about these new the election today. There's two measures that are being put on the ballot that the firefighters are bringing forth a measure that are saying that they've been discriminated against because they were exempted from this bill. So there was this solidarity that was growing. So I think, like I said, when the cops marched in, they were taking a tray of bratwurst to the students because they hadn't eaten all day. And the place just erupted and it became, okay, we're one of you. We're not going to be on the other side. And that was published widely in the newspapers. And I think once the cops stepped up, suddenly now a lot of people started coming out. And you would go out every day around 4 to 6, which is when people got off of work. And you just see this steady stream of all kinds of folks circling the Capitol, going in, you know, writing signs, lots of families, lots of kids in strollers, lots. You'd overhear conversations of mothers saying, now this is democracy and this is what's wrong. And the child would ask questions. And,
wow, what a learning moment.
Yeah, amazing.
Better than being in school. So, Amy, with what you witnessed in Wisconsin, what was the sort of gender dynamic that you noticed? Because, of course, most of the unions that were exempted from the law, the security unions, the law enforcement, firefighters, those are primarily male-dominated unions. Did that cause people to sort of question the gender dynamics of who was being attacked and who was not?
You know, I just want to tell you a quick story. I love that you asked me this question because I think the issue of gender has really been overlooked in this entire Wisconsin story, and that an attack on collective bargaining rights has really been an attack on women, nurses, teachers, social workers, secretaries, and the growth of the labor movement in the last 10 years. We really have immigrant women to thank for that. But I'll tell you, one day I hadn't had a good conversation with a teacher, and I went outside and I thought, I just want to find a teacher. And I saw this woman sitting in front of a statue. There's a beautiful bronze statue, which you've probably seen in some of the footage, which is a woman, and her hand is raised to the sky, and the name of the statue is Miss Forward, and it was built during the suffragist movement in Wisconsin. Wisconsin has a great historical legacy of getting women to vote. And there's a smaller version of Miss Forward on the very top of the Capitol, a gold version of her. And a lot of people look to her, a lot of women in Wisconsin look to her for strength and support. And it's just a beautiful, beautiful statue. So this teacher looked quite down to her, and she was sort of sitting and kind of looking down. And I said, it was very cold. And I said, are you a teacher by any chance? And she said, I am. I teach at Madison Memorial High School. And I said, what's wrong? And she said, you know, I come here every day and I sit at the foot of this statue just to gain strength so that I can go back and teach my kids and I can, you know, sucker hope from her. And then she told me the story of who Miss Forward was. And I said, well, why are you feeling so downturned? And she said, you know, people keep coming and putting blindfolds over her and pasting her with signs. And I'm tired of seeing her looking like she's ravaged by this movement. I'm going to put her with garlands of flowers. And she started putting flowers all around her. It was just one of those moments, one of those feminine moments that I thought was really revealing.
And so do you think that there has been enough consciousness raised among those who marched? Were women's voices heard during the rallies? Were people seeing the attacks as being attacks on women?
I don't think people have articulated it as such, because I think the main voice that's coming out of Wisconsin is we are all Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. We are all one, and that we're all united against Walker and the Republicans. However, International Women's Day occurred while I was there, and there was a women's march, and there was some discussion. And there's definitely – okay, this is completely unscientific, but I would say 3/4 of the protesters and the people who slept in the Capitol were women.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow. So they were on the front lines. They took
Absolutely.
The risks, and they, you know, there's a picture. There's a piece of one of your videos of a young woman being dragged out with a sign in her hand. And, you know, it almost brings tears to your eyes to see her. And then you juxtapose that with some of the young African-American men who were dragged out 40 something years earlier. So it was pretty remarkable. This week also commemorates the anniversary of the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr., which happened April 4th, 1968. And there have been demonstrations happening, rallies happening around the country, We Are One rallies. And you did a video as a filmmaker that brought up in a visual format the similarities between the tactics that civil rights activists used in the 60s that Martin Luther King Jr. brought up, particularly particularly with respect to labor rights. We just had an interview with Michael Honey, who brought up that the legacy of Martin Luther King Jr. in Wisconsin. But you were able to bring together these images of people demonstrating in the 60s and people demonstrating just a few months ago in Wisconsin. The similarities are striking. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I think a lot of people don't actually realize that at the end of his life, Martin Luther King was definitely moving in a new direction in terms of linking the civil rights movement to the labor movement. And he was in Memphis, and he was marching with the sanitation workers, which were AFSCME members, the same mm-hmm. union,
right.
And predominantly black male. And they had a march called the I Am a Man March, that my dignity and my rights, both as a black male and as a worker, as a public employee, are what they're linked. And he, if you listen to his later speeches, the speech prior to the Memphis March and leading up to that march, I just want to read something. In the video I did, I quoted why we need to support labor unions and how they're completely linked to the economy and to dignity, and wage and income defines who you are as a person and defines society as a whole, right? So this is from one of his later speeches. "These are revolutionary times. All over the globe, men are revolting against old systems of exploitation and oppression, and out of the wounds of a frail world, new systems of justice and equality are born. The people who sat in darkness have now seen a great light."
And we link to that video from our website, uprisingradio.org, so that people can see those words up on the screen interspersed with the footage from that time. And it is pretty remarkable. How do you feel that the movement in Wisconsin, the people who showed up in Wisconsin, were thinking consciously about what MLK had taught America? Or has it sort of become part of our national subconscious, if you will?
Well, you know, I think that's why I titled my film, Why Wisconsin? I'm still struggling with that question myself. Why did this happen in Wisconsin? Of course, similar things are happening in Ohio and Indiana and Florida because similar legislation has been either passed or introduced. And I don't know. You know, I really don't have the answer as to why this happened in Wisconsin, except that I have to say that there is a proud history of labor rights. And we talked about this before, that mm-hmm. it's where the eight-hour workday comes from, unemployment benefits. We have in Wisconsin also a commitment to open meetings, to discussion. And that was completely shut down by the legislature and by Governor Walker and how they passed this bill. And the palpable anger that I could feel from those people that showed up. I mean, they had just had enough. You know, you can only take so much if someone's beating you up. And it's just that one blow that makes you turn around and stand up and fight. Mm-hmm. And I think as the movement grew and as there were so many different cross-sections of people, there was a feeling that you could get rejuvenated and regenerated by talking to a nurse meeting a cop and talking, or, you know, a social worker sitting down with a young child, or, you know, even a filmmaker having an interview with a 67-year-old retired employee whose husband's a farmer and they're losing their farm. And so as these conversations were building and as the movement was building, I think Wisconsin was – I think we're on the cusp of asking the question of where we're going in this country and what is democracy? What are my rights as an individual? What are my rights as a worker? And, you know, what are my rights as a parent? And are these things that I need to fight for? You know, do we all have to fight for these daily? And I guess the answer is yes.
There were a lot of signs in the videos that you took in Wisconsin that people had the word democracy on them, you know, that you can't kill democracy, or this is what democracy looks like, which is the common refrain that we just even heard. And it's, I think, quite impressive that people are able to link and were linking very openly the concept of workers' rights, the desire to need, you know, to want to speak and be part of the public discourse to the very notion of democracy, which, you know, Republicans claim that they're for, and as do all elected officials. So that's, I think, was a pretty powerful, powerful aspect of it. And I'm wondering if that'll have some impact also on electoral politics, as we've been talking about elections in Wisconsin. I'm sure the turnout is going to be higher than average for an election that's, you know, not a presidential election.
Yeah, a lot of money has been spent on both sides. I mean, so Kloppenburg is running against him, and apparently they spend about the same amount of money, and they're doing mudslinging ads, and it's interesting. Obviously, Prosser is somebody that's publicly come out and said that he totally supports what Walker is doing, and a lot of the get-out-the-vote efforts have been to try to unseat him, and who knows what's going to happen. This will be a kind of a clarion call today. Mm-hmm. We'll figure out what's going to happen with the rest of the recall efforts. But again, the measures I spoke about, and I think this is at the core of how we see our exercise in democracy and how it's going to play out from Wisconsin nationwide. So two measures have been put forth from an organization. I don't know if you know this organization, Wisconsin Wave. And one is for the city of Madison and one is for the entire United States. And it's basically trying to reverse Citizens United law.
Which is a Supreme Court law that allows corporations to have unlimited spending on campaigns.
And some of the language in this measure is really interesting. That they're saying that corporations are not people, so they should not be entitled to constitutional protection and rights, and that money is not speech. It's not free speech. And so it's sort of interesting that both these measures are being put forth in Wisconsin, and I do think that that's at the core of all of this,
well,
really, is
yeah.
how much money is being spent on these elections, who votes, why do they vote. And it's one thing to put your feet to pavement and march and pick up a phone and do phone banking, but it's another thing to question the way in which our entire electoral system is run. And how do you do that, really? I mean, you can't do that with a mass movement. You have to take these things to the ballot.
Mm-hmm. And those things could set a precedent nationwide, because those are very important questions, the whole concept of corporate personhood and money in elections. Well,
and labor unions as well. I mean, they spend a ton of money on elections as
sure.
well. So, I mean, if we rethink the way money is being spent on elections and we figure out how people are getting elected, I think you're going to look at a completely different country.
Well, we'll see. Has Wisconsin changed the U.S. forever or not? Only time will tell. Amy Williams, I want to wish you the best of luck with your film, and I'm sure we'll have you back on when the film is complete. Thanks so much.
Thanks again. Bye.
And again, Amy Williams's website is youtube.com/whywisconsin. I've been speaking with Amy Williams, a filmmaker who documented the 26 historic days in Madison, Wisconsin. This is Uprising. Our website is uprisingradio.org, where you can watch the video of my interview with Amy Williams, as well as links to her own videos. After this short break, we'll take a look at how immigrant labor fits into today's labor organizing.